Good afternoon. Welcome to WCNA 38. My name is Bob and I'm an addict. Let's open with a moment of silence followed by the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Carla has been asked to read Who is an Addict.
I'm an addict named Carla. Who is an addict? Most of us do not have to think twice about this question, we know. Our whole life and thinking was centered in drugs in one form or another. The getting and using and finding ways and means to get more. We live to use and use to live. Very simply, an addict is a man or woman whose life is controlled by drugs. We are people in the grip of a continuing and progressive illness whose ends are always the same, jails, institutions, and death.
Edward has been asked to read What is the NA program?
I'm a grateful recovered addict named Ed. What is the Narcotics Anonymous program? NA is a nonprofit fellowship or society of men and women whom drugs have become a major problem. We are recovering addicts who meet regularly to help each other stay clean. This is a program of complete abstinence from all drugs. There's only one requirement for membership, the desire to stop using. We suggest that you keep an open mind and give yourself a break. Our program is a set of principles written so simply that we can follow them in our daily lives. The most important thing about them is that they work. There's no strings attached to NA. We are not affiliated with any other organizations. We have no initiation fees or dues, no pledges to sign, no promises to make to anyone. We are not connected with any political, religious, or law enforcement groups, and under no civilians at any time. Anyone can join us regardless of race, age, sexual identity, creed, religion, or lack of religion. We are not interested in what or how much you use or who your connections were, what you have done in the past, how much or how little you have, but only in what you want to do about your problem and how we can help. The newcomer is the most important person at any meeting because we can only keep what we have by giving it away. We have learned from our group experience that those who keep coming to our meetings regularly stay clean. Thanks for letting me read.
Rand has been asked to read a portion of our literature.
I am Rand, I'm an addict from Albuquerque. Out of steps 4 and 5, reflections on courage. We addicts have lots of stories. Some of us consider to be deep, dark secrets others easily share. Sometimes even as a badge of honor, many of us are fine with divulging the goriest details of our using days, the mayhem, our childhood, and our experiences of victimization. Regarding the 4th and 5th steps, we think, no problem, I'm an open book. But as we do the work that is suggested, perhaps using the step working guide, there's a depth of inherent in those questions that goes way beyond our comfort. Exposing our own part in a situation turns out to be messy, agonizing, and illuminating all at once. For many of us, our pettiness, our unforgiving nature, or unkind acts, our egos on blast, our shame. These carefully guarded parts of ourselves turn out to be far more significant than the dramatic tales we thought we'd tell.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I have some announcements to make. I should have had this earlier, but we have them now. Please note that lost badges cannot be replaced. Please keep your badge with you at all times. Access to the main meeting hall. Please listen closely. We will have three separate lines for main meeting access based on your date of registration. Purple badges are boarding pass A, blue badges boarding pass B, and yellow badges are boarding pass C. Please look for the signage that matches your badge to line up for the main meetings. We also have assigned seating for those who have mobility issues, and let us know that if they cannot get off of their scooter, as well as designated scooter parking areas in halls A, B, and C. The elevators will be limited to mobility devices and strollers simply because of the demand we have. There is a reserved seating area in the main meeting room for volunteers, trusted servants, and staff, since they might be busy with their work assignments. Please honor that and refrain from attempting the seat in the reserved area. Elevator space is limited and needed for scooters and strollers. Please do not use elevators if you can use the escalators. The Lost and Found is located at the convention information booth in the convention center lobby. Please do not smoke on the loading docks. Smoking on the docks may result in being asked to leave the center. And if you are in the appropriate smoking area, please use the butt cans for your cigarette butts. We recognize that it is a common practice for members to take photos and videos in NA events and post them on social networks. We do not believe this to be a conflict with our traditions as long as they are for the enjoyment of members and are not made available to the general public. Please be considerate of our guiding principles and the anonymity of others as you share your photos and videos from this NA event. For more information, please see the service pamphlet titled Social Media and Our Guiding Principles. Thank you. Again, I said my name was Bob and I'm an addict. I got a couple minutes to share, and I'd like to share my gratitude to being asked to chair this meeting. I had the privilege of being an employee at the World Service Office of Narcotics Anonymous for 26 years, and I never chaired any workshop. I never spoke at any workshop. Take that back. I was on vacation one year, and I did do a workshop in Hawaii. But it's with gratitude that I come up here today. My clean date is 9/5/78. Much of what was spoken about in the previous workshop with the panel of 50-plus speakers, I witnessed and I was a part of. There was a question asked, was how did you feel about the first literature? Well, I was involved in developing the basic text. That workshop in Santa Monica, I was a part of that workshop. But I gotta be honest with you, it was very difficult for me to embrace this immediately because I had a lifeline with some other stuff that had gotten me alive and kept me clean. So I had to learn to trust the process. So I did just that, you know. But for the grace of God, go I. When I see people walking the streets, begging, panhandling, that's the state of my life when I came into Narcotics Anonymous. I was homeless, helpless, and hopeless. You know, I went into a VA hospital in 1978 and was introduced to this fellowship in the fall of 1978, and I haven't looked back. You know, life, you sometimes is grateful and grace, and there's grace involved, and sometimes it's graceless. There's things that happen in your life, and you just, you face them as life comes, you know. And Today, I'm grateful to be a, you know, I've always been a grateful member of Narcotics Anonymous. This is my home. You know, I say this not tongue in cheek, but from the pit of my heart. You know, I don't have a biological family. I was adopted when I was born. At birth, I was left in a hospital in Detroit, Michigan. But what I do say today is I have a logical family, and that's Narcotics Anonymous. Again, I'm grateful to have this opportunity, and with no further ado, I will shut up and I will ask our first speaker to come up, and that would be Mac from New Zealand. Thank you.
Tihe Mauriora. Ko rangi niu e tūhi o nei, ko papa tūnuku e tākoto nei, tuturu whakamāua ki a tīnā. Haumi e, hui e, tāiki e. My name is Mac and I'm an addict. I got clean in a little place called Christchurch in New Zealand. I'm an indigenous member of that country, and you know, I'm reminded that back home we are a majority in every poor statistic there is. We top suicides, teen pregnancies, unemployments, jails, the lot, and yet we are a minority in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. My clean date is the 21st of August, 2011, and you know, I'm just a teenager here compared to the previous speakers. I am grateful and humbled to be asked to share here today. This is my first World Convention. I was sharing earlier when I first arrived, my social anxiety was so, when I first arrived into the rooms, my social anxiety was so high that simply coming to this event would be completely overwhelming. And here I am 13 years later, completely overwhelmed. Anyway, I've been asked to share a little bit on my experience of steps 4 and 5, and my experience of strength and hope around those goes a little bit like this. Initially, when I did my first fourth step, I said to my sponsor, oh look, I'm a bit fearful of doing this fourth step. And he said to me, why is that? And I said, well, because I've been listening to others, mostly newcomers who hadn't done it, talking about their experiences, and they were stalled, or some of them had stopped, or some of them hadn't even started. And my sponsor looked at me and he pokes me in the chest and he says to me, if you're afraid of doing your fourth step, it's because you haven't done your third step properly. So, anyway, eventually I come to understand the importance of faith and how that would carry me not just through the fourth and fifth steps, but through the rest of my life in recovery. And so eventually I got around to starting on my fourth step, and you know, I started off with my resentments, and if you had a wife like mine and kids like mine and a job like mine, well, you'd have a few too. And as I was working through these resentments, one of my mentors said to me one day, he says, never forget the three characteristics of an addict is that we are super sensitive, we are childish, and we are grandiose. And as I was working through my resentments, I could see my super sensitivity in broad daylight. I could see how my reactions were always childish in the extreme. And my grandiosity extended not only into what I expected of you, but what I thought you should expect of me. And so, you know, I'd already done some work on resentments by this time, so I knew the power of prayer and forgiveness. And I also knew that it's all small stuff. So writing those down wasn't that hard, but it was revealing. Next, I got into my fears, and when I looked at that stuff, I discovered that, you know, inside this addict, there was an inner child, and at some point, that inner child had felt abandoned, had felt rejected, had lost trust with anybody. And these underlying feelings drove a lot of my behaviors. And I came to understand that my using was simply a symptom of a much deeper issue and a much deeper problem that lay in here. And so as I started working through these feelings of guilt and shame and you know, all of that stuff, things started to, patterns started to emerge, and they were recurring. And what I found was that my fears were the same fears. They were just manifesting themselves in different ways. I began to understand that my lack of self-confidence was matched only by my lack of self-esteem, and of which I had none. And all of the stuff then helped me, because the next thing I did was I started to look at how I treated others. And you know, the step working guide, you can say what you like about it, but if it's nothing, it's nothing if not, what's the word I'm looking for? Thorough. And so I started looking at my treatment of others, and as I was doing that, you know, it became pretty, the more I wrote, the more it became obvious that my self-centeredness and my selfishness and my self-seeking drove so much of my behavior. And it's my behavior that was the problem. It's my behavior that I've learned to correct here in this fellowship as a result of doing these steps and trying to live a more spiritual life. My using, I was actually very, very good at it. But my behaviors were just abominable at best, at times. So anyway, I'm working all this stuff, writing all this stuff down, and I'm starting to see these patterns of behavior developing. And I'm realizing that, you know, this stuff is, it's revealing in a way that I never imagined the fourth step would be. And so I ended up with a list of assets and a list of liabilities, and the only thing that separated them was my ego. When I apply my ego to my assets, they become liabilities. And when I remove my ego from my liabilities, they become assets. And so on paper, it looked pretty good. Yeah, I wrote it up, it looked pretty strong on paper. You know, I had the right amount of pathos when I wanted you to feel sorry for me. I had the right amount of gravitas when I wanted you to, you know, support me. So I thought, yeah, but you know, as we all know, a spiritual life is not a theory. And so it was time for me to do my step five, and as you may have heard, shit got real. So I'm looking at my fifth step, and at this point, I decide I'm going to take a bit of a holiday from recovery. I'm going to sit on my laurels. I've survived the trauma of my fourth step, and I didn't die. I didn't burst into flames, and you know. And one of my mentors said to me, "How's your fourth and fifth step going?" And I'm like, "Oh yeah, it's going okay. I don't feel like I need to do any more right now, though. So I'm just having a bit of a, you know, I'm just coasting along a bit." He looks at me and he said, "The only reason you're not doing your fifth step is because your disease doesn't want you to get well." And I thought, oh, is this what complacency looks like? So that afternoon, I made an appointment with my sponsor and to go and do my first step with him. Now, I came into the rooms, and I've heard people come into the rooms and they talk about turning up, and they just felt loved, right? They just felt like they'd come home. Well, it wasn't like that for me. I turned up and I was suspicious of everybody. I came from a world where you trusted nobody and nobody trusted you. And so it took a long time for you to break down those walls so that I could start to trust people. And in that time, I started to develop a relationship with my sponsor. And what that meant was that when it came time to do my fifth step, it made it easier because I already had some trust in this man. Because, no, I could tell myself, that was easy. I could tell my higher power, that was easy too, because my higher power loved me. You know, I could say what I like, my higher power loved me anyway. But telling another human being, yes, that felt ick. And but, you know, thankfully I had this relationship with this man, and I was able to do it. And, you know, one of the things that he provided me was objective feedback. And in that objective feedback, he actually right-sized a lot of my fourth step. The stuff that I still had a tendency to catastrophize, he was able to right-size. The stuff that I still had a tendency to minimize, he was able to right-size. And so therefore, his feedback enabled me to see my fourth step, what it really was. And what I discovered was I wasn't all that bad and I wasn't all that good either. Somewhere in the middle. And and he helped a lot because, you know, he would share some of his stories with me, and they kind of made my stories sort of pale by comparison. And so that made it easier as well. But yeah, certainly the feedback was useful, and the ability to right size my stuff was useful. And, you know, in the fourth step, I got to see my part for the first time. But in the fifth step, by saying it out loud to another human being, I got to own it. I got to own my part and say, yeah, that was me. I did that. I'm not very proud of it, but I did it. And, you know, the fifth step... My fifth step, anyway. I don't know about your guys. For me, my fifth step was cathartic. In fact, every major fourth and fifth steps I've been through since then, I've always had a sense of catharsis about it, and this was no exception. But with that catharsis came this newfound self-awareness. Right? I suddenly understand. I slowly came to understand why I behaved the way I did. And along with that self-awareness and that insight came this growing self-acceptance of who I was. I was able to look back now and accept that, you know, all of the things that I've done, all of the things that I'd learned, everything that I'd experienced, these were all contributing to who the person I was here today, standing in front of you. And the thing is, I like who I am today, which is a far cry from the person I turned up, who turned up here, who didn't like himself. And the only person I didn't like more than me was you. But today I like myself, you know, and I accept that, you know, I've done things and you know, I still had work to do, obviously, you know, in the steps to come, but there is a humility that was deeper than the humility that I got from the fourth, and even more than the third and the second and the first steps that came with my fifth step, and allowed me to accept that, yeah, that's what I was, and this is who I am today. And, you know, I think anybody who's done a fourth and fifth step will understand that it's only through acknowledging our weaknesses that true strength comes. And certainly that was the case for me. So, you know, today I strive to be more softer, to be more gentle, to be more loving, and to be more kind. My name is Mac and I'm an addict. Thank you for listening.
Thank you. Now I'd like to introduce our next speaker, Gina.
Hi, family. I'm an addict. My name is Gina. Please don't ask me to stand up. This is as good as it gets. I'd like to thank a loving God for waking me up this morning alive and clean. I don't know about the rest of you, but any day I open my eyes alive and clean, the day has already exceeded my expectations. And I mean that sincerely. I have no illusion, no doubt, that it did not have to be anywhere near this good. Thank you to whoever had some faith in me to ask me to come and do this. I hope you feel the same way when I'm done. So I have to move this because I have this little timer over here and I'm honestly not tall enough to see over the top. I also just recently found out backstage, as I was coming up, that this is being translated. So I would just like to thank the translators for their service. And how much it touches me that we touch each other, even when we don't speak the same language. Even when we may not understand the words, the spirit of recovery, we touch one another in here. I came to Narcotics Anonymous. My clean date is April 25th of 1983. I was 20 years old. I had been using for half of my life at that point. It may not seem like a lot to some of you, but it was a lot to me. I had been tricking on the streets of New York since I was 15. And I got here for one real simple reason, and that was that I had no place left to go. This was the last stop on the block for me. And I need to remind myself that for a lot of you coming in, you might be coming in here because this is the last stop on the block for you. You know, if you didn't love me, if you didn't welcome me, if you didn't hug me, I remember the service of the woman who was the first person to give me a hug and give me her phone number. Those are the things we do in here that matter, not necessarily this, but the woman who gave me that first hug and who told me welcome. When I got clean in New York in 1983, NA was very new, and we didn't have a lot of experience with steps, and we were kind of the blind leading the blind. But we knew that we didn't want to use, and we held on to one another. We didn't have a basic text. We had a white booklet. We had a handful of IPs, some of which don't even exist anymore. And I heard people talking about this fourth step. And they talked about it with such fear and such trepidation. Like, you know, I think it's really important for those of us who have been here to really let people know that I don't believe that anybody's death certificate says that they died because they did a fourth step. But I guarantee you that there are some people whose death certificate might say they didn't do a fourth step. I was handed an IP in a previous version, but we have an IP today that I believe is one of the best kept secrets in Narcotics Anonymous. It's this little oversized IP number 4 called Working Step 4 in Narcotics Anonymous. And I am always surprised how many people don't know that we have this. I believe today that the point is for us to do an inventory And there is no right or wrong way to do this. And take the direction of your sponsor. I got clean prior to the step working guide. And I don't put the literature down at all. I believe we have some amazing tools today, but we do not have an approved official way of working the steps. And the step working guide is not the only way. If your sponsor tells you to do an autobiography, if your sponsor hands you working step four, if your sponsor hands you the step working guide, or however they do it, that's wonderful. Just do it. Just do it. But in 1983, there was another version of Working Step 4. And if any of you have ever seen it or ever gotten your hands on it, it had a very, very long section on sexual behavior. And it had a list of behaviors and asked to what extent you participated in this. I'm grateful we changed it. I'm also grateful that I did it, and I have to be honest. I came in here with a lot of secrets, and I did my first four step when I had less than a year clean. And I did it to the best of my ability, but I really didn't have a whole lot of ability at that time. I walked in here blaming everybody else in my life for why I was the way that I was. I was born to teenage parents who were ill-equipped to be parents, but you know what? I'm 61 years old today, and it's time for me to stop blaming my mother for not having breastfed me in 1962. You told me that my life could be as good as I wanted it to be. How free do you want to be? How free do you want to be? Because how free you want to be is how much you're willing to do the work. And that first fourth step was a lot of blame, and it was a lot of finger pointing. And I believed that I got a raw deal in life. I believed that I was always a day late and a dollar short. I had the wrong parents. I had the wrong neighborhood. You know, we didn't have enough money. We grew up in the wrong location. If only, if only, if only. And being a destination addict, and I don't know if you're a destination addict, but I'm a destination addict because I believe that it's always the next one's going to be better, the next job, the next boo, the next apartment, the next bank account, the next one is always going to be better. Well, if I'm not happy where I am, how is the next one going to make me happy? But I did that fourth step, and I sat down with a sponsor who is my sponsor for 31 years, and she raised me in here. She took a little girl by the hand, and she taught me things, and she didn't start me on steps, and she didn't start me on literature. She started me on things like, sweetie, you need to start taking a shower, like, every single day. You need to stop putting your hair up in a hat because you haven't washed it in a month. You need to stop picking your clothes up off of the floor and seeing if they pass the sniff test. You know, I was reduced to the animal level of living, and I needed someone to take me by the hand. And my gratitude is she not only taught me how to be a grown-up and a woman, she taught me something that I never knew that I had the capacity to be. She taught me how to be a lady. And I did not know how to do that. I walked in here, I was 20 years old, I wore fishnet stockings, I wore dresses that didn't cover my butt, and I slept with every man in here because it's what I knew how to do. And you know, you loved me enough to tell me the truth about me. I grew up with some old-fashioned Narcotics Anonymous, my sponsor told me, I'm not the bakery. We're not sugarcoating shit here. But when we sat down to do that first fifth step, she said to me, this is like asking for directions to Brooklyn. And I said, okay, I'll bite. She said, if you want to get to Brooklyn, I can tell you on one condition. I got to know where you're coming from. I don't know which direction to send you. If you have a vision of the woman that you would like to be, we need to know where you're coming from. And that's the purpose of the fifth step. It wasn't enough to talk in the fourth step about what I had done. It wasn't enough to say that I didn't care about me or you enough that I would turn around after I crossed my heart and hoped to die and kept your secret, that I would tell the person next to me as soon as you turned your back. I had no integrity and I didn't know that. I didn't know that I had no care for another human being, that I would sleep with your boyfriend or your husband and not think twice about it. And in the fifth step, it wasn't about what I had done, it was about trying to understand why I did it. And I love when I'm in a meeting and I hear you all talking about your four steps and how you were writing this and you saw these patterns and you're writing and you saw these patterns. And I am so envious of you because all I ever saw were 60, 80, or 100 pages of chaos. I never saw the pattern. I needed a sponsor to say, same thing, same thing. Look at it. She handed me a list after that first fifth step, and she said, this is who you are. You're selfish, you're self-absorbed, you're self-centered, you're impatient, you're intolerant. She had a list, she ripped me. And she said, is this who you want to be? And I said, no. And she said, well, that's why you have steps 6 through 12. You know? And I know that our basic text says that you can do your fifth step with anybody. And I don't like to put our literature down, but I will tell you, for me, I don't know how I would go step 6 through 12 with a sponsor if I did the fifth step with anybody else. Because I needed her to know who I was, to know where we were going, because she had the directions to Brooklyn. And it's sitting in meetings, you know, and when I go to meetings and I have to tell you and I hear you all talking, and there are some people, and you know who they are, right? You have one in your home group. I know you do. There's one in your home group that life is always good, right? Life is always good. Ever since I get clean, everything is wonderful. Everything's great. I've been on a pink cloud since the moment I got in. I don't hear hope in that. What I hear is shame. How come I'm not always on a pink cloud? How come my life isn't always wonderful? I have written 7 fourth steps. And I tell you that because 41 years later, I am still in the process of becoming who I am and who God wants me to be, and I'm not there yet. And having spent 2/3 of my life now in recovery, I will tell you that I have an absolute worst fourth step clean than I ever had using. And I am not telling you that because I think it's cute. I'm telling you that because if I didn't hear you tell the truth, if I did not hear you come in here and be honest about who you were and the failings that you had as a human being, you would not have given me the courage to be able to do that too. The third step empowers us to make decisions, and some of them are just going to be poor ones. I had 31 years clean, and through some poor decisions, I walked myself into one of the darkest places I have ever been in, where I thought about walking out the doors of NA and never coming back again. You told me that using wasn't an option, and I knew that it wasn't going to fix anything, but I thought long and hard about not coming back here. And I wrote another fourth step, and I got in touch with my own humanity, because I could forgive you for being human, but I couldn't forgive me for being human. That was okay for you, that wasn't okay for me. And it took me a long time to be able to do that. You know, I was 16 years clean when I was told that I was never going to have biological children. And there was nothing up until that point that was more painful in my life than knowing that this body that God and Mother Nature had given me was never going to do what I thought it was supposed to do. And I was so angry. I was so angry. And I felt like such a failure as a woman and a human being. And my sponsor said, right. And I've done a lot of mini four steps on specific situations. And she came back and she said, what are you feeling? And I said, I feel like a complete failure. And she said, do you want to be a mom or do you want to be pregnant? And I said, I don't know. And she said, keep writing then. And I came back and I said, I want to be a mom. And she said, you don't have to get pregnant to be a mom. You know, there are times today, no matter how many four steps I've done, no matter how much work I've done, no matter how long that I've been here, that I am still that four-year-old child standing in the doorway of that apartment building in New York City, watching my father walk down the hall with a suitcase in his hand. And I can still feel that pain. But it doesn't cripple me today. And the fourth step has saved my life from those poor decisions, because there is nothing more painful than being clean and having made a mess of your life. And if you have ever been in that position where you are clean, and you are on the floor in the fetal position, and you are rocking yourself, trying to get rid of the pain, not knowing where to go with it, you have continued to save my life. The last fifth step that I did about a year and a half ago, I saw some things about myself that I'm not particularly proud of. And I feel it's really important to keep talking about the process that we're in. I am snarky. And my sponsor told me that I am snarky. And my first reaction is defensive, but I am snarky. And this little 4'11" something now, I used to be 5 feet half an inch, but I am no longer. Learned a long time ago that I wasn't a fighter and I couldn't really kick your butt, but I could cut you in half with my tongue. And I'm still capable of doing that, and that isn't who I want to be. You know, I continue to do the work because I want to be today a kind, loving, and gentle woman. And I don't want to just act that way to your face and stab you in the back when you turn around. I really want to be a kind, loving, and gentle woman. And if you encounter me this weekend at all, I hope that everything that I'm saying is exactly the way that I treat you, because today it's important to me, not just to say the words. You know, I've had the opportunity to stand at a podium like this a number of times, and one day, when I'm not here, I hope that your memory of me is not so much what I've said, but how I've lived. You know, how I've treated you and how I've treated me. So, the power of all of us this weekend, if there's anybody to whom you owe amends and they're here, please make them. If there's anybody that you love, let them know that you love them.
I love you.
Love you back. Love you more. This is the only life we get. If you have me on social media, you will see that the quote on my page is, "Enjoy life. This is not a dress rehearsal. This is the one that we get." And when my time comes to leave here, I hope that those of you here who are younger, like when I got here, that you're going to be there to stand by the door and give whoever is walking in their hug and tell them, "Welcome to Narcotics Anonymous. You don't ever have to use again." So if nobody else has told you that they love you, I love you, and God loves you also, and thank you for letting me share today.
Let's thank our speakers one more time. Cliff has been asked to read "We Do Recover" and close the meeting with the third step prayer.
My name's Cliff. I'm definitely an addict. We do recover. When at the end of the road, we find that we can no longer function as a human being, either with or without drugs, we all face the same dilemma. What is there left to do? There seems to be this alternative. Either go on the best we can to the bitter ends, jails, institutions, or death, or find a new way to live. In years gone by, very few addicts ever had this last choice. Those who are addicted today are more fortunate. For the first time in man's entire history, a simple way has been proven itself in the lives of many addicts. It is available to us all. This is a simple, spiritual, not religious program known as Narcotics Anonymous. Thank you. We will now have the third step prayer. God, take my will and my life, guide me in my recovery, and show me how to live. Please. Thank you.